Good afternoon. The time is 3 o'clock, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 19th of January, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Jason Caputo and Craig Rubin about Friday night's show of mashups. Larry Pursley will also be here with a preview of his presentation tonight on international markets for Alaska's gas for the Juneau World Affairs Council. Larry Gardner will give us a rundown on Saturday's Robbie Burns night. Nancy DeChuny will be here to give us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. At Writer's Almanac Music and More today on a Juneau afternoon. There's a high wind warning in effect from 6 p.m. this evening till 5 a.m. on Saturday. Otherwise, the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, very windy weather with low temperatures 0 to 10 degrees above. Friday becoming cloudy and very windy weather continuing.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Wednesday blackout of Wikipedia and other websites brought a flood of concerned calls to congressional offices, but many lawmakers remain divided on new internet piracy legislation that could impact Native communities. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, D.C.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are no strangers to lobbying blitzes, but the unorthodox protest from Wikipedia and other popular websites over internet piracy legislation has grabbed lawmakers' attention more quickly than many previous protests. The staff of Virginia Republican Morgan Griffith spent Wednesday fielding a lot of calls about the issue, but the congressman says he's been most struck by the internet blackout.
Not sure about shutting down Wikipedia. I haven't needed to use it today, but a lot of times I'll look, you know, little trivia facts up. But, of course, use Google on a regular basis, so I think it's very effective.
The controversy is over the House's Stop Online Piracy Act, or SOPA. Its proponents say the legislation is needed to protect U.S. companies and tribes from overseas websites that steal intellectual property. But Google and other protesting sites maintain provisions of the bill would force them to censor data, which could change the internet, just as some tribes are finally getting fair access to it. Virginia Democrat Jerry Connolly says he thinks the legislation is too far-reaching.
I don't like the implications for the internet and for intellectual freedom.
After the internet blackout, some lawmakers are dropping support of the bill, but the Senate is still scheduled to vote on its version of the online piracy bill on Tuesday. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
The family of a First Nation woodcarver and others are disappointed a former Seattle police officer will face no federal charges for the woodcarver's death. Eilish O'Neill has more.
Andrea Brenneke is one of the Seattle attorneys representing the late John T. Williams and his family. She says that the Department of Justice chose not to prosecute Ian Burke after reviewing the evidence against him.
It wasn't that they are condoning that shooting in any way, but instead recognized that the legal standards are very high, and they didn't think under the circumstances and what they had seen that they would likely prevail.
The Department of Justice declined to be interviewed for this report, but Brenneke describes their decision not to prosecute Burke as disappointing.
The family really felt that a criminal trial was warranted where John T. Williams was shot while walking down a Seattle street carrying the tools of his trade, a carving knife and a piece of wood.
Even so, Brenneke finds it heartening that the Department of Justice did do a full-scale review of the Seattle Police Department in response to the John T. Williams shooting. Philip Neal, who grew up on tribal lands in Northern California, helped organize a rally on Saturday to call for Seattle police reform.
John T. Williams, of course, has been probably the most egregious and well-known victim of police brutality in Seattle in the past 10 years. The intense injustice of what happened and then the added insult that Ian Burke, the officer who murdered him, is not going to be facing any charges whatsoever.
Among other demands, the marchers called for the dismissal of John Diaz, the chief of the Seattle police. But Andrea Brenneke, the lawyer of the Williams family, hopes for a less disruptive route to justice.
We had a restorative circle after the shooting that brought the family and members of the community and the police chief and the command staff together to talk about what was going on and to get to some of those underlying issues and needs.
For National Native News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
During this week in 1958, Lumbee tribal members broke up a Ku Klux Klan rally pushing them out of a North Carolina county. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Quick note about a lecture that was scheduled for tonight. Dr. Sven Hawkinson's lecture on Aleutic culture that was scheduled for tonight has been canceled due to cancellation of his flight from Kodiak. Dr. Hawkinson and the museum are attempting to reschedule for another day due to the announcement. On air and the Juneau Empire also listed the lecture for Tuesday, January 24th. It is not scheduled at that date. If you need more information about that, you can call the Alaska State Museum at 465-2901. In the studio with me now are musical guests Jason Caputo and Kari Groban. Jason is a great guitar player. He's one of the monster guitar players in town. And Kari Groban is one of the monster singers in town. Here to talk about mashups that are going on tomorrow night at the Rendezvous. Kari and Jason, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
So first of all, what is a mashup?
Well, mashup is kind of when you take two different songs and you overlay them over one another and just have them playing concurrently. And so we're doing that. We're changing it. We're not purely a mashup. We're changing some of the songs slightly. But we're actually laying over one song on Nancy Sinatra's Bang Bang, and we're laying it over kind of a punk blues thrash tune called Mexi Melt by Southern Culture on the Skids. And one of them, like the Nancy Sinatra song, people probably know, is somewhat melodramatic and languid and haunting and almost has a slow feel to it. And the Southern Culture on the Skids tune that we have is kind of a thrashing, fast tune that's very edgy. And so when those two overlay, it really creates some interesting... I think they're surprisingly complementary when you hear them lay over each other.
And this is being played live and not recorded?
That's right, yeah. We're playing all the parts live.
What do you look for when you're looking for songs to mash up together?
I think I usually try and find songs that you don't at first think will go together well, because that would be kind of boring if you hear two songs and you think, oh, yeah, sure, they're almost exactly the same. But the exciting thing for me is when you get two songs that... when you hear the titles, your first response might be, how is that going to work? That doesn't make any sense. And then when you hear it, you go, oh, of course, it's perfect. You know. And I think the more different they are, one of the things about a mashup I think that gives it integrity is that the two parts together are greater. They're different. They create a different piece than the two parts separate. And it really creates something new. And I think when you have two very different pieces and find a way to meld them together, you get this transformative piece that's really quite different, something on its own, something very original.
Is it vocal and instrumental?
Yes. Yeah, we have Kari's our singer.
So she will be playing Nancy Sinatra in the hip boots?
Yes. Are you going to have the boots?
I do have some boots that I got from another show.
That's a great idea, Jeff. I
would love to do that. Yeah. So, and then we have, Jason sings as well as plays guitar, and so does our trombonist Mike Busey. He sings as well. So we kind of back up each other and just having a lot of fun with how we can mix our, our resources. And then... Dale McFarlane we have on drums. Fantastic drum player.
Yeah.
you can't help dancing when he's playing.
Yeah, he's
really wonderful.
Yeah.
And then Chris Frary on bass. He's a wonderful bass player.
Well, what's the history of mashups?
Well, I think they go back a really long way. I'm no expert for sure, but I probably first came to... to musical mashups with, like, Frank Zappa has done a bunch of things where he would take guitar solos for one song and place them in a completely different context and a different song, so kind of mashing up his own tunes. But probably before that, I think there are literary artists that I who did kind of, I think, springs out of Dadaism, where you're taking different techniques to create random, taking random elements and seeing how that they can form a new piece. And I came across that with William Burroughs, has a literary cut-up technique where he's literally cutting up pieces of text and reorganizing them. And some of the real pure aspects of that are there is no thought, there's no intentional art to it. It's just this random creation. And then we tend to try and actually massage the pieces together so that with intention, not just randomly throw them together.
I guess some mashups take more massage than others.
Yeah, the Nancy Sinatra and the Mexi Mel took a little massaging.
It seems like to me you're talking about a DJ nightmare where two turntables are going on at the same time.
Yeah,
and you have no control, but you hopefully have control over this.
Yes, throughout most of it, there are a few parts right now where, specifically when they're segueing into each other, where we kind of leave some intentional chaos in there, so that we're improvising over that piece to make them work. But most of it's pretty well planned out.
Are there any rules or guidelines?
Rules or guidelines? I think we just throw out ideas for how to put things together, and then we try them out, and maybe they work and maybe they don't, and hopefully we manage to hold on to what works. And we're starting more and more to record our rehearsals so that we can listen back at the next one when we sort of remember something really cool happened at the last rehearsal when we did this song, but we can't remember exactly what. It was something with the rhythm or something with the arrangement, and then we can listen back.
Yeah.
But the
underlying rule, though, I think we were talking about this before, is that we wanted it's actually really accessible music. I mean, it probably sounds in concept like it's this crazy thing. It's absolutely accessible. One rule is you have to be able to dance to pretty much, I'd say 99% of the stuff that we do is totally accessible, and it's got a great beat, and that's where Dale and Chris really come in. They just create these wonderful grooves as the bass player and drummer. So, but we want it to be first and foremost absolutely fun and easy for people to listen to, and then what we try and do is offer some new textures and new ideas that are a little exotic in a bar. And maybe a typical bar atmosphere. So people are dancing and also going, oh, wow, that's pretty neat. That's cool. I didn't expect that.
The bar we're talking about is the Rendezvous that's going on tomorrow night. I'm talking to Jason Caputo and Corey Gruvin, doing an evening of mashups. Starting what time?
10 o'clock.
And how long does a typical mashup last? Yeah, and you have more than one that you've been working on, I imagine.
Yeah, actually, yeah. But we mentioned the Nancy Sinatra and Mexi Mel, and then we have...
We're working on a bluegrass song that Jason put a B section to that wasn't originally there, and that B section started. It reminded me of sort of Finnish Norwegian folk style singing melodies. So I've been improvising in that style, and it's solidified more and more kind of what the melody is. So it's kind of a bluegrass, Finnish, Norwegian style folk mashup.
Yeah.
So
those words are kind of like a mashup of words themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a blue, we took a bluegrass tune and we kind of threw a more kind of rock and roll approach to it, and then that's actually an Alaskan bluegrass tune by an Alaskan band, and then Kari came up with this Finnish melody, and the bluegrass tune is kind of it's a sad song about it starts out and this guy sees this this girl from his town says, "Where you been?" kind of thing. "I want to dance with you." And then you kind of find out that she has a pretty dark life. That's why he hasn't seen her a while. But it kind of plays with that idea. It doesn't quite come out and say the whole story, but you kind of pick that up. And then Kari has this finished melody that comes in that is kind of sad and haunting. And I think it adds a real depth to that whole story. And also, I think, you know, I start to think, is the girl Finnish? Is the town Finnish? Or I don't know. I know it as kind of Scandinavian. I didn't identify as Finnish, but it kind of gives a depth and color to, you know, is this Petersburg? You know, that this is happening at, or that's kind of neat. And she kind of goes on as long as she needs to on that Finnish section, so the song could be a little longer or shorter depending on how she's kind of crafting it.
Try to not drag it out longer than I have something to say, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think one thing, kind of the mashup idea is a way for us to keep playing around and have kind of challenging ourselves and having fun with our music. And also to freshen up our songs to the people who have been listening to us quite a bit. And so I think that is really, really important, that you don't get bored with your own stuff, because that will, you know, translate out when you're playing. So we're kind of dedicated to staying on top of that and yeah, having fun with our music and throwing little curveballs at each other and see what happens, you know.
It'll all be happening at the Rendezvous tomorrow night starting about 10 o'clock. Mashups with Corey Grovendries, Caputo, Dale McFarlane, and Chris Ferry. Is there a cover charge to get in?
There is no cover charge. Absolutely free.
Just the price of admission is a smile. Right, Jason and Corey, thank you so much for coming down to the station today and talking about the mashups going on tomorrow night starting about 10 at the Rendezvous.
Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 19th of January, 2012. Today is the day that snow fell on Miami in 1977. Two Arctic fronts slammed into Florida. Flakes started falling in the pre-dawn hours. School children ran out to try to catch the flakes on their tongues. The cold weather decimated the citrus and vegetable crops, and 150,000 migrant farm workers lost their jobs. Tampa got more than 0.2 inches. The city came to a standstill. It's the birthday of Edgar Allan Poe, born in Boston, 1809. Parents, actors. Father left the family a year later. Mother died of tuberculosis a year after that. The boy raised by a family in Richmond, Virginia, who sent him to the University of Virginia, where he did a certain amount of drinking and gambling, which led to a falling out with his foster father, and Poe was disowned. Spent the next several years in poverty, trying to support himself, writing anything he could. He first made his name writing book reviews, and he was a brutal book reviewer. People called him the Tomahawk Man. Writing did not pay well back then, and in 1842 his young wife Virginia contracted tuberculosis, and his work became darker and more grotesque, and he wrote some of his best-known macabre stories and poems. He wrote The Telltale Heart in 1843, and then The Raven in 1845. Though it was a big success, he only got $9 for the poem. His wife died in 1847. Poe died 2 years later, found delirious in the gutter in Baltimore. Cause of death was never determined, but most people assumed it had to do with his alcoholism or drug addiction. But many of the assumptions people have long held about Edgar Allan Poe can be traced back to one of his rivals, Rufus Wilmot Griswold. Poe had written a very sharp review of one of Griswold's books, and Griswold got revenge by writing Poe's obituary for the New York Tribune. And he became Poe's literary executor and wrote a memoir of the author in which he portrayed Poe as a drug addict, a drunk, a madman. We know now that Poe did suffer bouts of depression. that he had a complicated relationship with alcohol, did some binge drinking followed by long periods of abstinence. But his reputation as a drunk and a madman can be traced back to the fact that he was a hard-edged reviewer of other people's work, and his enemies were quick to spread demeaning stories about him. Here's a poem by Edgar Allan Poe on his birthday, A Dream Within a Dream. Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, O God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? O God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? A poem by Edgar Allan Poe. The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work. Keep in touch.
Time is 3:22 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about the World Affairs Council and Larry Persley's International Marketing of Alaska's guest talk tonight at 5 o'clock at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Jim Clark and Larry Persley, thank you very much for coming down to the station tonight.
Thank you.
So, Jim, you want to give us an overview of the World Affairs Council first, please?
Well, the Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit volunteer organization which brings speakers to Juneau. Admission is free, and we're very privileged tonight to have Larry Persley, whom I've known for years, and I think most Alaskans have. He's been the editor of a number of newspapers around the state. He has a particular affinity for Southeast Alaska, I might say, having been the editor here in Wrangell, and knows more about oil and gas than most Alaskans. And so I think we're very privileged to have him speak tonight from his federal post as the pipeline coordinator. So I know you have a few questions for Larry, and I hope people will come to hear him tonight.
Just a couple. It starts at 5 o'clock at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Larry, if you could describe your job and a little bit about its history, please.
Sure. 2004, Congress passed something called the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Act to help, to facilitate, to, I guess, ensure that the federal government doesn't do anything to make a difficult project any more difficult than it needs to be. And that's the role for our office as the federal coordinator for an Alaska gas pipeline. Work with a project developer, work with federal permitting agencies to try to move things along, translate, hold hands, facilitate, look for problems, resolve them in advance if we can.
And John Katz held that position for a number of years?
Well, John was the state of Alaska's office director in Washington as a state employee. My job as federal coordinator for the gas line is specific only to work on an Alaska natural gas pipeline that would take North Slope gas to lower 48 markets. That's the only job I have.
And who's your boss?
President, I guess. He signed the paper. Not that I talk with him regularly. Not that I've even met him. Well, but we're an independent federal agency within the White House. Within the White House structure, but not physically in the White House.
What's the most rewarding thing about your job and also the most frustrating?
Well, the most frustrating thing is it's 2012 and we still don't have a gas line after decades of waiting. I think the most rewarding thing is learning. Just every day learning something different and trying to translate, trying to educate the public so they know the problems, the pieces, and trying to work with federal agencies so they understand how important it is for Alaska to get this project, and how important it is that the project developer, in this case TransCanada Exxon, do everything right so there are no delays in the permitting if they actually decide someday to go ahead with construction.
From your seat, what's stopping us?
What's stopping us is markets and risk. This project construction cost $40 billion, assuming no cost overruns. To get the financing to build that, you need companies who are going to sign 20-year contracts to use the gas line. They've got to take the gamble that they know in 2012 where the market is going to be for gas in 2020, 2030, 2040. That's a risk in the tens of billions of dollars. That's a high hurdle to overcome.
How much gas is there?
There's a lot of gas on the North Slope. We know there's 35 trillion cubic feet, which is a number for people. It doesn't mean much. It's enough to keep this pipeline full for 15 years and then some. Once you have a gas line, people will explore for more. There's probably enough gas up there to keep the line running for 4-5 decades.
We're the most obvious markets right now, I guess.
Well, there's really three global markets for natural gas: Asia, Europe, and North America. The biggest by far is the North American market, so the project I'm working on, as set by Congress, is a pipeline that would move Alaska gas to the lower 48, to North American markets. A lot of Alaskans believe that sending it aboard tankers to Asia markets, China, Japan, India, is a better financial risk, more attractive. Those are the two. It's Asia or North America if the line gets built. Europe doesn't need it.
Is the decision who to sell it to based on the highest bidder or are politics involved in that? When I say politics, I mean national and
also international. Well, it's already been sold in that the producers have paid the state for the leases, and that gives them the right to produce the gas. Whenever they produce it, the state gets 1/8 of it as its royalty share. So unless the state wants to write a check for $40 billion on the permanent fund to build a big project, you're incumbent on the private investors, the producers, to decide what they want to pay, what they want to build. That will be based on the market, where they think they have the best chance of making the money or where they have the least chance of losing money.
Who are some of the other players in the game?
Well, the three major producers, certainly on the North Slope: BP, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, TransCanada, which is a pipeline company, one of the largest in the world. They have the state license that allows them to get reimbursed for some of their development costs as they try working this project forward. So big players, federal permitting agencies, state legislature, which is paying, appropriating money for those development costs, TransCanada, the pipeline company, the three producers.
Timeline?
If everything went well, perfect, fiscal decisions, investment, permitting, everything, first gas might move through the line by the end of 2020. Probably not going to happen that soon just because there's always delays. There's all the response. This is just such a long lead time project, even just steel. This project will take as much steel as 25 nuclear-powered super aircraft carriers. It's a lot of work.
You come up with analogies like that every day?
No, that one I lucked out on.
I'm talking with Larry Pursley, one of the speakers tonight at the General World Affairs Council. 5 o'clock at the Juneau Arts Culture Center, International Markets for Alaska's Gas. Larry, what else are you talking about tonight, or is that pretty much it?
Pretty much. That's my life right about now, Jeff. It's natural gas. I'm working on... We do a lot of public education outreach to try to explain to people how markets work, how projects are built, how they're financed, what the regulatory process is. For example, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is the main overseer of permitting this project, on the federal level, this week has a team in Alaska starting what are called government-to-government consultations. Federal law says if a project is going to go through that would affect Native American Indians, tribes, the lead government agency, in this case the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has to hold government-to-government consultations with those tribes to talk about effects on them. So the federal agencies are doing the work on the assumption that there could be a project someday.
You wake up every morning hoping the air is.
Sure. It would be nice to succeed. You know, in 1968, we discovered oil and gas on the North Slope. The idea back then, build an oil line, take the weekend off, turn the equipment around, and build a gas line. Well, got an oil line 10 years after discovery, still waiting for a gas line. The economics of it are tough.
And Jim, thank you so much for coming down the stage today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I guess I'd say if people can't make it, maybe I shouldn't say this, but they could go to our website. We do a lot of public reports on gas markets, on this project specifically. It's just www.arcticgas.gov, G-O-V.
Very personally, Jim Clark, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Jed, a poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea. Well, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. Ten folks said, Jed, move away from there. Said California is the place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is, swimming pools, movie stars. Well, now it's time to say goodbye to Jed and all his kin, and they would like to thank you folks for kindly dropping in. You're all invited back again to this locality to have a heap in heaven of their hospitality. Hillbilly, that is, set a spell, take your shoes off.
And you are tuning in to KTUO News, and you know a little bit of music from Andy Durrell. Tune into the Alaska Identity Project tonight to hear host Adrian Lopez talk with Ray Bruetta, Executive Director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, that's also known as ASME, from 7:30 to 8 p.m. Nupiak artist Vernon Rexford will be here to talk about his work. It's coming up tonight at 7 o'clock on the Alaska Identity Project. This little live bagpipe music, if you didn't guess that already, from Laurie Gardner and David Bajan. You're in the studio here to talk about Robbie Burns Night, which is coming up this Saturday at Centennial Hall. Laurie and David and Rowan and Jake, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Yes, thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, tell me who Robbie Burns was, if you could, please.
Well, Robbie Burns is the immortal bard of Scotland, and we are going to be celebrating his birthday on Saturday, the 21st. His birthday is really the 25th, but Robbie Burns was the poet that wrote such poems as A Red, Red Rose and Coming Through the Rye, Auld Lang Syne, just to name a few.
Rune and Jake, could you step up to the microphone and tell me a little bit about what's going to be happening on Saturday night?
There will be, like, haggis.
You have to tell me what haggis is.
A sheep intestine.
Oh, yeah.
It is not sheep intestines.
What if we let David?
Haggis is a traditional Scottish meal which has its origins in the lower classes, shall we say, of rural Scotland, and does have some organ meats in it, but is traditionally prepared in a sheep's stomach, but has a lot of really good things, amongst which is toasted oatmeal. And so it all gets mixed together and baked with a secret recipe. And we have a fabulous haggis meal, tatties and neeps, potatoes and rutabagas go with the haggis. And, of course, gravy. And it's a wonderful, wonderful meal, along with all the wonderful piping and Highland dancing.
Haggis doesn't have a great reputation, but it's really good.
It is. It's fabulous. It always reminded me of meatloaf, I guess. But it is. It's very tasty.
Yeah, and especially the way our group puts it together. Ray Bennett is the haggis master, and he's passing on his secrets to the next generation of haggis makers in Juneau. But the way Ray's recipe can't be beat.
How do you get sheep's stomachs? Do you get them online?
You're local butcher.
And what else is going to be happening on Saturday night?
Saturday, as Dave said, is going to have the City of Juneau Pipe Band, who is hosting the event, will be performing along with the Highland Dancers. And this year we have 26 dancers. We also have our younger members joining the band this year, and that's Ronan Davies and Jake Marlin, along with Bradley Peterson, who's not here in the studio with us today. But they are our youngest members, and our theme this year is costuming for our youth, because we have a lot of older person outfits and really old outfits, and it's time to get the youth outfitted. So that's what our major fundraiser is for this year.
Ronan and Jay, could you tell me a little bit more about your participation in the event on Saturday?
We are going to play most of the songs with them. Some of them we may not know, but most of them we do know, so it's going to be really good music.
What instruments do you play?
The bagpipes.
How long have you been playing the bagpipes?
For a little over 3 years.
Yeah, they started on the practice chanter with Doug Gardner helping them out, and they've been marching with the band now for a year. They marched in the 4th of July parade this last year, too.
All right. And what does it cost to get into Webby Burns tonight? What time does it start?
Well, tickets in advance, is that is a good idea. $30 at Hearthside Books or from a band member, but Hearthside is probably the best bet. $20 for students in advance, and at the door it's $5 more for each of those. We do have a special performer this year, and that's Mari New. She's a premier dancer, and she's homegrown. She's born and raised in Juneau, and she is a premier dancer that has started in instruction with me many years ago, took a few years off, came back with me, and has been working extensively with instructors from Scotland and Canada, and is going to be our highlighted performer on Saturday night.
She's knocked him dead at the Alaska Folk Festival many times, it seems like.
Yes, Maury's very accomplished.
What's the secret, David, to playing a set of bagpipes? I know you're my neighbor, so I can hear you practicing every now and then. But
I'm sorry?
What's the secret to performing on bagpipes?
Oh, determination and really wanting to play them is really the main secret. If you're kind of, you think, well, I just kind of sort of want to play, it really will never cut the mustard. You really have to, in the bottom of your soul, you really have to love the bagpipes and want to play them.
Bagpipes in various sizes, is this the only size that you own?
No, actually, these, what Laurie and I are playing are Scottish small pipes. And, of course, we all own full-scale Great Highland bagpipes that we play in the band and solo. But these small pipes are great for just situations like this, a small room inside, and you can play all the music, get the same kind of feeling, but minus the 110 decibels.
All right, I've been talking with people involved in Robbie Burns tonight, Laurie Gardner, Dave Pajon, everyone, and Jake. Thank you for coming by the station. How about another tune?
Okay, great.
We have to warm up the bagpipes here a little bit.
The first tune that we played was Scott and the Braves coming into it, and this is High Road to Gerlach.
Arts Up on K2 is supported in part by the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 3:45 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juno here on a Juno afternoon. Our next guest is Nancy DeTourney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Nancy, didn't bring your bagpipes with you.
I forgot them. It was too cold to carry them.
Oh, darn. Well, maybe next time.
Yes. But that was fun.
It's the fun on Saturday night.
Fun on Saturday night with Robbie Burns, if you're not doing one of the many other many things you could be doing for fun on Saturday night. Okay, yeah, it's a kind of a fun little weekend that we got going on here. Tonight, the World Affairs Council has Larry Persily speaking. He'll be over at the JAC at about 5 o'clock. We also have at 5:30, Alice Tiernan is going to be talking about her bucket list of challenges. I think Sam Hawkinson was supposed to be at the State Museum this evening, but all the planes are not flying.
Out of Kodiak.
They don't have planes distributed for some reason or another. I think they had a little panic attack in Seattle or something about that snow. Let's see, what else do we got going on Thursday? Healthy Cooking out at Pavitt's Fitness and Health. They do a series of seminars on a regular basis. This one is called Healthy Cooking. You can give them a call at 789-5556. It's free, starts at 6:30. There's Salsa Dancing with Alejandro. This is always a very mysterious one to me. They will not reveal where it is, and they won't even give me a phone number. So if you would like to find out about Salsa Dancing, it's a regular lesson that happens on Thursdays, you need to email dancingartists@gmail.com. Let's see. Yes, this weekend, Friday night, it's Dr. Noise Goes Bananas. Did you talk to them?
Dr. Kyle and Dr. Noyes, yesterday they sent us a very fun, and they have a song that they're doing about bananas.
All right.
Operatic bananas.
Operatic bananas. Yeah, well, okay then. So it's a family concert for all ages. It is Friday night at 6 o'clock at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. Kyle has been really promoting, making me want to go hear this one a lot. There are other things you could be doing. Dan Hobson will be at the Baranoff doing his classical guitar. And late at night, Kari and the Wrist Rockets will be at the Rendezvous. And I believe you were talking with them today, right?
They're doing some mashups.
Mashups. Kari and the Wrist mashups. I don't know. Got to be careful. And then, let's see, also Friday night we've got the Risky Poetry Slam. The Wushkinade Poetry Slam is going to be moved to the Rookery. There's a $5 donation for that, and then but people are encouraged to bring three poems and come to the Rookery at 6:30 on Friday. Kyle and Jim Darling will be out at the University of Alaska Southeast Sound and Motion Series. They'll be talking about the whale music that is going to be featured as part of the symphony concert. And also the whale that has been temporarily living on the Jack lawn is supposed to be migrating out to the university as part of this, because it's actually Spike. So you can go out at 7 o'clock on Friday to the Sound and Motion Series. Let's see what else is Friday. I think that's it. Wait a minute. Yep. So then Saturday morning, Coffee and Collections, Jim Fowler, who has illustrated many, many books, will be talking about the art of book illustration. This is a free thing. You get a little coffee from Heritage. It's at 10:30 in the morning on Saturday. We have also, let's see, in the morning at 9 o'clock, Shelter Operations. The Red Cross has been offering a series of sort of shelter and disaster type trainings. You can give them a call at 463-5713 to learn more about this series. There's one on Saturday, and then there's one again on Tuesday evening. As I mentioned, it's the symphony, Sounds of River and Sea. On Saturday, the pre-concert talk is at 7, and then the concert is at 8. This is at Hearthside, our high school auditorium. On Sunday, it's at 2 and at 3 o'clock. The pre-concert at 2 and the concert at 3 on Sunday. Get your tickets. You can get them online. You can get them at the Jack. You can get them at Hearthside Books. We also, as we know, you just were talking to the Robbie Burns folks, so they've got special Robbie Burns night over at Centennial Hall on Saturday. Oh, I forgot. The Juno Audubon Society Saturday morning at 10 o'clock will be out at the West Glacier Trailhead. You can be learning about tracks and signs. It's really a fun sort of thing.
So we'll be talking to Pam and Kevin O'Malley tomorrow.
I'll be sure to wear my, you know, track shoes or whatever.
Oh, good.
I don't know.
Dress warmly.
You dress warmly for that event for sure. Let's see, what have we missed here now that I've got this new thing going on? It's hard for me to keep track. Tuesdays, we're doing this thing over at the Jack all through this month. We're having people who've gotten individual artist grants talk about their projects that they did with the grant money that they got and just sort of answer questions. We had a nice conversation with Tony Newman last Tuesday about his book that he just published, which was something that he got a grant from us to do. Della Cheney, who is a local teacher, artist, and weaver, will be talking about a weaving project that she's been doing. If you're interested in raven's tail weaving and all sorts of things, she's a really interesting, fascinating person, and that's at 5 o'clock on Tuesdays. At the same time, there's a travelogue that Adrian Lopez is doing, sponsored by the Juno World Affairs Council. It'll be at the Goldtown Nickelodeon on Tuesday. We have Let's Quit Bartlett Hospital is sponsoring a quit smoking thing on Tuesday nights at 6. And as I mentioned, there is the Red Cross thing going on a Tuesday night as well. Wednesday, Animals Out of Paper. It's the pay-as-you-can preview. Their next play begins its run. That's at 7:30 next Wednesday. You can get tickets, actually, for that if you want to, I believe. Or you can just come to the door. Call them 364-2421 for more information about that. The Kashavarov Winter Lecture Series begins. This is something the Alaska State Museum does at noon on Wednesdays. The first one next week will be Bob Banghart bringing us up to date with the new SLAM project, the State Libraries, Archives, and Museums building, which is going up behind us over here. Wait a minute, we forgot LunaFest. That's happening on Friday at 6 o'clock over at Centennial Hall.
Not tomorrow, though.
Hmm?
A week from Friday?
A week from Friday. Oh,
it's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow.
Okay, great.
Okay, then. Some Friday. Pay attention. I never know. I get things flipped up, but it is tomorrow, and it's over. You can get your tickets at Hearthside Books or at the door. I think that's pretty much the summary. It's not a real, real busy week, but it's not a slow week either. It seems like there's quite a few things going on. You got to pay attention.
Capital Steps.
Capital Steps, yes. Okay, so officially we're sold out of tickets. However, we aren't really.
Oh, you're saying that.
Well, you know how it is. There's always people who don't show up, and there's always a few extra chairs you can squeeze in. As a part of the welcome packet for the legislators when they came in, we included a complimentary ticket coupon. Now, we wanted to make sure that if they wanted to come to see the Capitol steps, we held that many tickets. We didn't sell them. So it's possible that not all those folks will be able to come. So I would say come to the door. Come at 6:30, we'll start a wait list, and I would be really surprised if we don't get everybody in there. So don't give up hope. Keep the faith. It's going to be fun. Seems like next week is when it starts to get really busy.
And Wearable Art.
Wearable Art is also, Saturday is sold out, but Sunday is still, last I checked, there was one front row seat. There were several tables still, and there's plenty of general seating. I was talking to someone today who said, oh, yes, I'm going to be a model in that. And her dress sounds indescribable, so I won't even try. But it involved hair. That's all I know. The rehearsals for it start in 2 weeks, I think, so we'll have a better idea about what's coming up for that. But I'm very excited. We are starting the auction for this online. It'll start on the 21st, so you can pre-bid for stuff if you want to. Get your bids. It'll be like eBay. You can go to a certain point and anyway, need not be present to win kind of deal. So we're going to, yeah, it's kind of busy over at the Jack, and, we're trying to keep it together.
We're doing a great job of it.
Well, we're trying.
And if people want to get the word out about various things that are happening in the city, don't fax us, please.
No.
Our fax machine has been unplugged because we get spam.
Well, and also we're doing things online. You can send them to the Juno Arts Council at gmail.com or at gmail, .com. And what's the K2 address?
KTUO.org.
Okay, so you can email
actually,
them.
You go to our KTUO.org or KRNN.org or KXLL.org. And follow the link where it says Community Calendar, and you will be redirected to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council website.
Right, and then we are actually experimenting. If you're an organization that regularly likes to post things, give me a call, and we'll talk about ways that make that really easy for you to do. But
you talk on the telephone?
Huh?
You
just, we can't email? Talk on the telephone. I mean, no. I think a lot of the arts organizations are going to start entering their own things. There's a certain little protocol that we're going to go through for that. But like I said, this is turning into it's really convenient to have everything in one calendar. So.
All right, Nancy and Journey, thank you for everything that you do. And
well, thank you.
Thank you for the station today.
Thank you for having me.
Time is 3:56 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sirsuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juno, you can also receive KTUO on GCI Cable Juno on Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard at Digital Channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktuo.org. Quick thanks to Amanda Compton, who is organizing the technical side of today's broadcast, and a plug for her project, the Mudrooms Project. Her and her little bus put together a great program a couple Wednesdays ago, and it's going to be broadcast in its entirety next Monday on KTUO's Focus on Community. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with whale researcher Jim Darling about his sound and motion presentation tomorrow night at the University of Alaska Southeast. We'll learn about the Judo Shotokan Karate Do Club. We'll also get a preview of tomorrow night's fireside lecture at the Mindanao Glacier Visitor Center about the high school intern program at Pack Creek. We'll also talk with Kevin O'Malley about tomorrow Saturday's Tracks and Signs Audubon outing at Writer's Almanac Music and More tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Drive safe and walk safe.